October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we are joined today by longtime El Paso News anchor Estella Casas to talk about her journey through breast cancer and how she is helping other people through theirs.
You know, women are not diagnosed only in October, but this month has been designated as a Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and so that's the opportunity to have a platform to talk.
And we are joined by Dr. Stephanie Niemer of Texas Tech Health Sciences Center in El Paso.
1 in 8 women in the United States will be diagnosed with breast cancer during her lifetime, and the treatment options are going to vary depending on the stage of the cancer when it is found. I think in all cases, it's important for patients to have a multidisciplinary team who can get them through the process of not only the treatment for the cancer itself, but also any reconstruction that they choose to have afterwards.
575-646-2212. We'll get started in 5 minutes. It is 106. Good afternoon and welcome to Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. This is KC Counts, and I'm so happy to be joined during Breast Cancer Awareness Month today by longtime El Paso News anchor and now creative brand strategist for Viva Auto Group, Estella Casas. Hi, Estella.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Well, I haven't seen you in person in a very long time. Seeing you by Zoom today, you might be watching on our Facebook page. You can follow along there. You can also leave comments and questions on our Facebook page, or you can call 575-646-2212 if you have a question or a comment for Estella. But I worked with Estella at ABC7 for a short time, quite a long time ago, and she was just, really everyone there was so supportive. But Estella, well, you know, when somebody like Estella Casas encourages you and gives you words of positive feedback, it is just so moving. And so you were just one of the reasons that was such a great experience for me. Thank you, Estella.
You're welcome. Thank you. You know, I was there for 27 years, so been there a long time and saw a lot of people come and go, but you were always very, very talented. You are very, very talented.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for joining us to talk about your story and what you're doing to help others today. And we're also joined by Dr. Stephanie Niemer, a plastic surgeon with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. She is also director of breast reconstruction. Welcome to KRWG, Dr. Niemer. Glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here. I thank you for inviting me to come on and share a little bit of information with your listeners.
Well, you know, you mentioned in our short intro that 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. And that really is a staggering number when you take a moment. And we don't want to leave men out of the conversation. Men certainly can be diagnosed with breast cancer as well. And Estella, I mean, having been, you know, on television for that long, and your life is really lived with your audience. And so when it comes to such a personal thing that happens to you in your life, how do you decide to talk to your viewers about it?
Well, having reported on breast cancer awareness and for so many years, I thought being a news anchor goes beyond just being a journalist. You have a platform where you need to use to disseminate information and to in my case to tell people that they have control of their health, that they are their best health advocate, so they should be aware of their bodies. I remember when I first started at Channel 7 many, many years ago, I did the first mammogram story. So I remember going in with a male photographer, and it was very, very hard for me because, you know, nobody likes to talk about their breasts, right? You know, they're a part of us. They certainly don't define us, but you know, we need to talk about them because 1 in 8 women get breast cancer and 1 in 1,000 men get breast cancer too. So I just remember going in there and thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? You know, showing my breasts. And I said, just be very careful. But you know what? It's for the greater good. And you have to always be very open about talking about your journey. I talked about being a high risk mom. I got pregnant at 41 after a tubal ligation. So, you know, I think a lot of people need to use their positions as a platform to you know, for the greater good.
Well, I certainly remember that journey, because that was another journey that you shared. And at the time, I was still a viewer and had not yet gone to work at Channel 7, but it was something, another journey that you allowed your viewers to be a part of with you. So we're going to hear a lot more about that. You know, you mentioned using it as a platform, you know, to help other people. And I think, Dr. Niemer, you can address this. There's been some kind of, I don't know if the word is conflicting, but we've had some different recommendations about when we should be getting mammograms. And so what is the current recommendation, and what is your opinion?
You know, I think that to some degree that it is a controversial subject, I will start mm-hmm. by saying. So depending on which of the guidelines you're going by, I think anywhere from starting at 40 years to starting at 50 years, and that's for patients with average risk. The guidelines for the American Cancer Society is that women who are aged 40 to 44 who have average risk should be given the option of starting breast cancer screening annually, and then that women aged 45 to 49 should be screened annually. But that differs, as I say, depending on the resource reference. So the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends that prior to 50 years that it should be really an individual decision. And that's talking with your physician about what the benefits and risks are in your case. Obviously, if you have a strong family history of breast cancer or any known risk factors, you may choose to start a little bit earlier. And I think that it really has to be a personal decision and made in concert with your primary care physician, or if you have a breast physician that you speak with them.
And so one of the things that's important is to know if you have high risk factors. And there may be a lot of women that don't. And especially, Estella, you know, there are great disparities in healthcare all over our country, but nowhere is it more pronounced than in the borderlands. What do you see in terms of that disparity on a day-to-day basis? Estella, that's for you.
Oh, me. Okay, that's a question for me. Well, having lived through this, you know, it's very expensive. So let me tell you about my story. My mother, in her 70s, had a cystosarcoma, which is an encapsulated cancer. She didn't get any chemotherapy. She didn't get any radiation. They just removed it. It's like, okay, forget about it, and that's it. So I forgot about it. My mother's sister, so she's my maternal aunt, she died of breast cancer because she never took care of it. And nobody knew she had breast cancer until somebody went, she was on her deathbed, and somebody opened her up or changed her clothing and noticed that her breasts were purple. Anyway, and so, but I thought, well, you know, I'm on top of things. I'd had a mammogram 8 months before, and you know, it just happened to me. And I always talk about angels. There are people around you who lead you to places. And I remember that a friend of mine, she's the one, I had just gotten a tetanus shot and it got a little swollen, but that tetanus shot is what alerted me to the stage one, stage two cancer, bilateral breast cancer, HER2 positive, progesterone negative, estrogen negative cancer. And if I wouldn't have had a mammogram till 4 months later, so I don't know where that would have been. But I was on top of my health, always. Exercise and eat right. I'm lactose intolerant, so I don't have any milk. I try and eat a little bit of bread. And I mean, just doing things right. And it just happened. So just being a woman, you're at risk of getting breast cancer, right? And after, I remember reading the pathology report afterwards, and there was a lot of bad stuff in there anyway that was going to develop into cancer anyway. So I'm glad I just had that double mastectomy. But there is, so for example, we gave out 200 mammograms. The Standard Estela Casas Cancer Foundation donated 200 mammograms this past weekend with the help of Desert Imaging and the Rio Grande Cancer Foundation. A lot of people who got got together for this health fair. And women don't have access to this. First of all, it's a cultural thing. You know, I had already mentioned it. Women and men, and nobody talks about their breasts, right? It's taboo. But we need to have those conversations. And there is an awareness campaign in October, but we need to remind our sisters and our daughters and everybody, all the women around us, to get checked. And it's expensive. The mammograms cost about $200, and not everybody has those $200, and they just don't have access to healthcare. And along the border, it's even harder because, you know, the income level is low too. So I have seen that. I lived through that. And that's why we started the Centro de Estela Casas Cancer Foundation. So we can help a little bit. I can't cover chemotherapy costs. I can't cover all those things, but I can help out in small ways. And the most important way that I think I'm helping is to raise awareness and to be an example and to talk about my journey.
You talked about the tetanus shot that you got being what alerted you to the problem. Can you explain that further?
Well, I went in to see, I had been losing some weight, so I had thyroid cancer in 2010, and I had been losing some weight, and I needed to get adjusted. My synthroid maybe had to get adjusted. So I had been losing weight, but I had been taking dance lessons, and I had been going through a lot of new exercises. So I thought, well, I'm just going to go get checked. And I went in to see Dr. Georgina Escandon, and she said, when was the last time you had a tetanus shot? I said, well, I don't know. Geez, 100 years ago. And she said, well, why don't you get it? I said, well, do I really need it? Really? She said, yeah, you're here already. Let's just get it.
You could step on a rusty nail at any time.
Right? Anyway, but, you know, she's one of my angels. And so the nurse, you know, I got the shot, and this was in the morning, and I went to work, and in between newscasts, I didn't feel well. So I went home and I slept. And for the next few days, I was in pain. You know, it swelled up. And but we, a group of us, went to New York, and my friend, who is a physical therapist, Sandra Terrazas from Spectrum Therapy Consultants, she wasn't supposed to go. This is another angel. She wasn't supposed to go with us to Washington, D.C., and she changed her schedule. She bought a train ticket, you know, made a lot of changes, and she went with us. And that morning when we were going to go get a tour of Capitol Hill with Beth O'Rourke, I was still hurting, and I remember getting out of the shower, and I said, oh gosh, Sandra, you know, it's swollen. And she sat me down and took a look at it and went like this. Mm-hmm. And that's when she noticed that my lymph nodes were swollen. She said, you know what, as a physical therapist, I see this in women with breast cancer. I'm going, look, I just get chills just thinking mm-hmm. about it. And she said, and I said, okay. And, when we got back from New York and Washington, D.C., I went to see the doctor right away. And sure enough, he said, oh, it's probably infected. The tetanus shot, things happen. They, you know, they can get infected and you're going to be fine. I'm going to get you some antibiotics. And why don't we get an ultrasound? Why don't we get an ultrasound of your breast? And I'm going, okay, well, Sandra had already put that in my ear. And sure enough, I went in a week later, and when I finished the course of the antibiotics, and I remember, you know, lying there in the dark and just distracted. I was on my phone. You know, organizing things and getting things done. When the radiologist was doing the ultrasound, and she kept stopping and measuring, and I thought, well, I don't know.
Those take a long time, and I found that a whole lot more painful than the mammogram itself.
Sometimes it is. And then she said, "Well, I'll send this to the doctor's stat." I thought, "Well, they always said that, you know." So it was like they always said that, because I go in the doctor's office and we go over, you know, the results and all that stuff. And I said, "Okay, fine." And sure enough, 2 days later, I, you know, the doctor says, "You have cancer. And we need 3 biopsies." I'm going, 3 biopsies? Yes, you have a 1 centimeter tumor on your right breast, a 2 centimeter tumor on your left breast, and we need to check a lymph node. So it was all very fast. But yes, if I hadn't have gotten that tetanus shot, and if I wouldn't have had those angels around me, I don't know where I'd be right now.
Well, I want to talk to Dr. Niemer a little bit. You mentioned the type of cancer that you had. Dr. Niemer, maybe you can shed some light on you know, what types of breast cancers people are diagnosed with, and what are the ones that you worry about the most? I think you may be on mute there. Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that.
Oh, it happens.
I am unmuted now. In terms of the different types of breast cancer, there are several types of breast cancer that can develop, but I think the most common ones are going to be your ductal carcinomas and then your lobular carcinomas. And you may hear of people being diagnosed with DCIS, and that's a ductal carcinoma in situ. What that means is that it's a very early stage of disease, and that's compared to invasive ductal carcinoma, which would be once the disease has become invasive there in the breast. You know, we look at different things when we think about breast cancer. We look at their hormone receptor status, and that may tell us the types of treatment that may be appropriate for those cancers. And so, because there are some treatments that are targeted towards certain types of hormone receptors within the tumors themselves. And then you also can look at various markers for growth and look at how advanced the cancer is. And so that's going to determine if something's very early, it may be possible to treat it with surgery alone or with surgery and radiation therapy, or you may be looking at needing some type of chemotherapy or hormone suppressive therapy. So I do, you know, I concentrate more on the reconstructive side of things. And so I don't want to speak completely out of turn. And certainly if you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, then your own physician is going to be able to give you better ideas of what the options are for you. But that kind of gives you an idea of some of the things we think about on our side.
Is this the kind of thing, and either one of you can answer this question, but, you know, Estella, you just had a mammogram 8 months earlier. Is this something that you feel like the mammogram missed that the ultrasound ultimately found, or is there just no way to know if that cancer just developed since your mammogram that quickly?
Honestly, I think it developed after the mammogram, not because of the mammogram. But I remember I was getting mammograms every year, and they were following. I remember the radiologist that I ran into yesterday. They were following some other areas of my breast, some other areas. I remember seeing the mammogram, and I had like a lump in the middle, and they said, "No, don't worry about it. It's nothing." So these tumors developed out of nowhere, and they were closer to the chest. So I couldn't find them. You know, I've always advocated for monthly breast self-exams, and I couldn't have found it because it was deep in the chest. And gosh, you know, it just happened. It just happened. And I did have some history, of breast cancer in the family. But I have my daughter, and I tell her, you need to be very careful. She's 32 years old, and doctors haven't recommended a mammogram for her because many times when the younger you are, the more dense your breasts are and the more stuff can hide in there. So, but you know, they have the 3D mammograms, and there's, you know, and they have the ultrasound. So, you know, I'm concerned about her. I'm worried about her. And I'm also worried about my kid. Now, I don't have about my boys. I don't have the BRCA gene, gosh, you know, anything can happen. And you just never know. You just never know.
575-646-2212 is the telephone number. This is Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. I'm Casey Counts, joined today by Estella Casas, who you may know from her decades of work as a journalist and TV anchor in El Paso. Maybe you know her as a superstar singer. Maybe you know her as the creative brand strategist at Viva Auto Group, which she is the role she is currently working in. And we also have Dr. Stephanie Niemer, who's a plastic surgeon with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. Estella, may I ask, what was your choice when it came to what to do about the cancer, how to treat it, how aggressive to go, and whether you would follow up with someone like Dr. Niemer?
There was no question that I would have a double mastectomy. No question. There was also, so I when I got my diagnosis over the phone, They scheduled me for a double mastectomy 2 weeks later. And then I get a call from the doctor who said, we got to start chemotherapy first because you have an aggressive cancer. HER2 positive is an aggressive cancer. I'm no doctor, but I understand that triple negative is probably the worst cancer, breast cancer you can have. And then it's HER2 positive because it is aggressive. And it's the hormone receptors are negative for progesterone and estrogen. So I'm not on any medication. I took 12 additional treatments or 18 treatments of Herceptin for the HER2 positive, but I'm not taking anything. And so, it just happened. It just really mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. And there was no choice. I knew I was going to get implants. I did not want to go through the flap surgery. Dr. Niemer, I hear that's very difficult, and I guess the good thing is that I don't think I had enough fat down here to make.
I have some I can spare for anyone who might need. happy to make the offer, but let me get to the phone now. We do have a caller on the line, and if it's the same person I'm thinking of, someone that you certainly may have spent a little bit of time on the phone with over the years, that's Joe Galvan. Am I thinking about the right Joe Galvan?
Yes, it is. Hello.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call. And first, I want to just thank Stella as well. You know, she, even in Las Cruces, she's like the hometown girl that made everybody feel better about talking about breast cancer. And it really is important to women to see someone else that they can relate to and, you know, how to deal with their cancer issues. My question, though, is about reconstructive surgery and having breasts after you have a mastectomy. When are those decisions generally made? And what are the kind of options do you have now in terms of having reconstructive surgery and to be able to have some kind of a breast aftermath?
Dr. Niemer, go ahead.
Wonderful. Yeah, I think so. In terms of timing of breast reconstruction, there are a couple of different options. So certainly some women will opt to have reconstruction done very early in the time course. So we can actually begin reconstruction in many cases at the time of the mastectomy. So on the same day of the mastectomy, you go to sleep with breasts and you wake up with that first stage of reconstruction kind of underway. In other women, you know, you may choose to delay reconstruction either because of details about the tumor itself that maybe that you're going to need some more aggressive therapy and you want to just separate your obstacles. Or there are many women out there who are never offered breast reconstruction at the time of their initial diagnosis. And so there are many women out there who've had mastectomy and have not had an opportunity to go forward with breast reconstruction. The good news is that there actually is a law. This is the Women's Health and Cancer Rights Act. This is a federal law that was passed in 1998, and it requires that all insurance companies that cover mastectomy for breast cancer will also cover breast reconstruction, including symmetry procedures on the other breast. And so even if it's many years out from your diagnosis, we're happy to see you and to talk about what your options are at this point if you are interested in undergoing breast reconstruction.
I remember, Joe, I told my doctors, I said, I do not want to wake up flat. So they knew ahead of time that I did not want to wake up flat. And so when I went into my surgery, I said, do not take my wig off. And I want to wake up with breasts. So the first thing that I did, apparently, because, you know, you're kind of loopy after anesthesia, is I grabbed my head to make sure that I had my wig on because I was completely bald. And I touched my breasts. And I was not flat. And it was important for me. Like I say, breasts don't define you, but they are part of who you are. And I had reconstructive surgery right away. I had implants put, I had expanders put in, and every 3 weeks I would have some blue solution injected in there to expand the skin. And then I got my implants, and I'm very happy.
All right. Joe, did you have a follow-up question?
Well, I didn't realize that insurances would help cover that now. Is that a federal law or just in Texas?
No, that's a federal law. So that should cover you anywhere in the United States.
And that was actually a question on my list, and that law goes back to 1998. Who knew? So that's good news.
Wow, I didn't know. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks,
good to hear
Joe.
From you. 575-646-2212, the telephone number to call if you have a question for Estela Casas or Dr. Stephanie Niemer, or a comment to share. We'd love to hear from you today. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And Estela, you mentioned that, you know, this gives us an opportunity to talk to talk about it. And I want to talk more about your stand with Estela Casas Cancer Foundation. You know, you've kind of taken us through to that morning when you woke up and they left your wig on and you had your chest, and then moving forward, when did you decide that you really wanted to put something together that would help other people?
Well, I was getting my first chemotherapy treatment. I was diagnosed August 30th, 2017, and my first chemotherapy treatment was September 14th, so it was all very fast. And I'm sitting there getting, so the first chemotherapy treatment is about 9 hours long because they just bombard you with all this medication. I had two immunotherapy drugs and two chemo drugs. So I'm sitting there, and my boss from KBIA, my former boss from KBIA, Kevin Lovell, calls and says, hey, I got a call from Nancy Keene from Albertsons, and she's donating $50,000 in your name for cancer research. I said, wow, how does that happen? That's amazing. I said, okay. And then that evening, I got together with some people. I got together with a board member from the El Paso Community Foundation. And 2 days later, 3 days later, we had established the Stand with Estela Fund at the El Paso Community Foundation. And we had $150,000 in there just a couple of weeks later. So that money, it just happened. You know, again, you know, angels in my life and people who were able to make this happen. And so we've distributed a lot of money over the last 4 years. I donated $100,000 to UMC to name the infusion center. It's called the Estela Casas Infusion Center for Hope and Healing. And I give $20,000 every year for 5 years. We've given now gift cards, $250 gift cards to women through the Rio Grande Cancer Foundation. So they can go out and buy, I don't know, tennis shoes for their kid, to put gasoline in their car, or to help with deductibles. I would get thank you notes from these women saying, hey, I was able to do this. And now we're giving away free mammograms. And so that fund, it went from the Stand with Estela Fund at the El Paso Community Foundation, which is still there, to the Stand with Estela Casas Cancer Foundation, which it has expanded to men and women. I hope to do another campaign with Desert Imaging next year to address the needs of men. Cancer in men, and talk about prostate cancer, because that's a big problem here in the border too, and men don't like to talk about their prostates either.
And if I'm not mistaken, next month, November, is No Shave November, and the whole point is to focus on men's health issues. So we'll have to do that.
Absolutely. Yes.
We'll have to do a men-focused show next month. I wanted to get back on the topic of reconstruction with you, Dr. Niemer. You know, it's got to be a tough decision. Now, Estela said she knew right away it was going to happen. It was going to happen immediately. But for I can imagine for many women, it would be like, I've already been through so much, another surgery. This is a really difficult choice. Do you have any idea, like, how many women do opt for reconstructive surgery?
You know, I think it depends a lot on the patient population. And certainly the patients that I see in clinic in some ways have already self-screened into being interested in breast reconstruction. There was a study done several years ago that, and I believe it was here in the United States, that showed that fewer than half of patients who were diagnosed with breast cancer were offered referral to a plastic surgeon. And so mm-hmm. certainly if you're not getting a referral to a plastic surgeon, mm-hmm. then that can impact the rates of reconstruction. And I think that even though, as you say, the Women's Health Cancer Rights Act was passed over 20 years ago, but the fact that not everyone knows that they're eligible to have breast reconstruction, and they may think that that's something that needs to be paid for out of pocket, and so may not be something they seek out. I think when I do have patients come in and see me, one of the things that I emphasize is that there are no perfect options for reconstruction that are going to work for everyone. Some women may choose never to undergo reconstruction. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you don't know what the options are, it's very hard to make a decision that is right for you. And so that's part of why I'm very much an advocate for patients who are diagnosed with breast cancer getting a chance to speak with a plastic surgeon so that at least you have the information about what the options are.
Mm. 5-7. Well, let me just give the phone number. We'll get right back to you. 575-646-2212. Can't say it enough. If you would like to call in with a question or comment today on Voice of the Public, we'd be happy to have you along. Go ahead, Estella.
Reconstruction surgery is hard. I remember that the doctor he did put too much saline solution in there, and the scars would not close. The openings would not close, and so I had to go in and take some of that saline solution out so it would close up. And it's painful, and it's lumpy, and it's a process, and it's all a process, but. I just feel that you really do have to follow through and ask a lot of questions and be informed. And it is a shame that women are not told about reconstruction surgery because it's expensive, a lot of plastic surgeons don't want to mess with that because I imagine doctor that you've come across some other plastic surgeons in El Paso who probably don't want to do that because they would prefer to get, cash for everything else.
Yeah, it's certainly breast reconstruction is not for everyone on either the patient or the surgeon side of things. Mm-hmm. I think for me, it definitely is a passion, and it's very exciting for me to be able to feel like I'm giving patients a part of their body back. But as you mentioned, it is, and this is an analogy that someone made to me when I was in residency, that they had been told by one of their doctors that this would be a marathon and not a sprint. And they were really glad that they had given them that information early on because it kind of helped to mm-hmm. set that goal for themselves. And so I think particularly if you're going through breast cancer therapies that involve chemotherapy or radiation or those types of things, something to take into consideration that the reconstruction is going to add some time onto that as well, mm-hmm. Some additional recovery. And so that's why it really has to become a personal decision between the patient and her physician, how she wants to proceed with that. But again, having the options, you have a lot more information.
And I think it doesn't matter what health condition you have. You have to be an advocate for yourself. You have to do research for yourself. And to really, sometimes you have to know more than even some doctors out there, right? In order to make sure that you have all the options available to you.
Casey, many times. Let me hang.
While you're doing that, Estella, let me get Karen on the line here, because Karen has been holding. Karen has been holding with a question here at 575-646-2212. Good afternoon, Karen. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. And boy, Casey, are you right about being proactive about your own health these days? So my question is, if you were to have reconstruction, I've heard, is it a probability that upon having the saline or whatever that you will have put into your breasts, future mammograms, I've heard they say that you can't see if the breast cancer comes back or that you can't see fully with implants in. Whether you have reoccurring or even breast cancer to begin with, and I'll take it off. Is there any truth to that?
So I think if you have implants placed either for reconstructive or for cosmetic purposes, They will tell you that there is a chance that implants could interfere with your ability to detect breast cancers in future mammograms. You know, I think that we have very experienced mammogram technicians and radiologists these days, and they're really quite good at making some of those diagnoses. And so I don't think that one should not consider getting reconstruction in those cases, but certainly there are different views sometimes that the mammography technicians will need to take in order to visualize the breast tissue around implants. And sometimes there may be different types of studies that are appropriate to better visualize some of that tissue around an implant. So it's really, as long as you and your doctor are speaking about it and everybody knows what's going on, I think that it's still very possible to get good breast imaging.
I didn't know that I needed to have a mammogram even after reconstructive surgery and the implants. And it's sobering. It was sobering to see that mammogram when I had the first mammogram I had after my implants were put in. And I don't know if you all have seen them, but you know, when you see a mammogram, you see all the ducts, and you know, you see some stuff there. But when you have a mammogram, when you've had a double mastectomy, and it's all white, though you see this much, you know, like this much of skin, because they carve you out. The oncologist, the surgeon carves out all the breast tissue possible. Mm-hmm. And then they put in the implant behind the muscle, and that's all you have. So it is sobering to see a mammogram after you've had a double mastectomy and had implants. Now, it's a different story when you still have some sort of breast tissue and you put it behind the breast tissue and behind I need to get my mammogram this year too.
And Estella, was that a concern for you when you thought about moving forward with implants,
no,
whether it would make it difficult?
No, it wasn't, because I've already been told if the cancer comes back, it'll be probably on area. It's not going to be. It's going to be in the chest wall or right above it, because I have no breast tissue. And no, I didn't even think about it. No, and I'm not going to.
Better not to now.
No.
Karen, does that answer your question? I think she may have, she hung up. All right. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for the call. And if you have a question or comment today for Estella or Dr. Niemer, you can call 575-646-2212. Of course, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And Estella was kind enough to join us today to talk about her journey through cancer and how she is helping others through theirs. Dr. Niemer is a plastic surgeon with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso and the director of breast reconstruction. Dr. Niemer grew up, right? Raised in El Paso? Born and raised in El Paso?
Not born here, but I got here as soon as I could. So I went to first through 12th grade here in El Paso.
Well, I know, you know, Estella, how special it is when people do come back home and practice in El Paso, because so often we lose our young people to other communities where they can go and make a whole lot more money. So first of all, we're glad for the opportunity that you had to come back home with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso. I wanted you to tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you chose this path for yourself.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do so. So when I finished my high school here in El Paso, I decided I needed to leave Texas for a little while. And so I did my undergraduate work at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, and majored in biomedical engineering. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And it was very, very cold. And I decided that I needed to move back to Texas. So for medical school, came back to Texas. I applied to and was accepted into one of the MD-PhD programs here in Texas at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, and went on to get a PhD in bioengineering at Rice University.
And then you went, this is way too humid.
Pretty much, yeah. I applied all over. You know, I discovered plastic surgery really when I was in medical school, and it had not been something that was on my radar at all prior to medical school. You know, I think I had pretty much the layman's idea of what plastic surgeons did, and that's all of the cosmetic surgery. But I was introduced very early in my medical school training to the field of reconstructive surgery, and that was immediately I knew that that was what I was meant to do with my life. And so I went on to do an integrated plastic surgery residency at UTMB. So I stayed in the humidity a little bit longer, and then did a fellowship at MD Anderson Cancer Center in reconstructive microsurgery and advanced cancer reconstruction. And then I was tired of the humidity, so I had to come back.
Well, that's me. I'm in a sweet spot. Too far, any more north of here is too cold, and anywhere east is too humid. But we are lucky to be in the beautiful borderlands, mm-hmm. and obviously the weather that we've been enjoying here for these last few days, it just can't really get any more perfect. So the perfect month to get out and support breast cancer awareness in your community. I want to talk a little bit about kind of the emotional side of this and the support system that anyone who's going through such a difficult health situation really needs, and specifically what it means to have a support network for women who are going through breast cancer. Estella?
It's a roller coaster, certainly. You know, my community was always very supportive with through my high-risk pregnancy, through my thyroid cancer. And they just, my community just lifted me. And, you know, family and friends. My daughter had just started a job in Houston. So she kept coming in. And my son had just graduated from Kirksville, Missouri, Truman State. And I was a little upset at him because he came home and was not going to go to school and it was going to work. And I thought, why? You need to go get your master's. You need to go get your doctorate. And I was a little upset. But, you know, God works in mysterious ways. And so he kept him here because I needed him. And then I had, you know, my 13-year-old son who turned 18 already. And so my community and my family lifted me. But it is very hard. When you hear you have cancer over the phone, it's devastating. Mm. And then they tell you, well, you have cancer in both breasts. It's, you know, it just keeps piling up and piling on, and that you need chemotherapy, and that, you know, being on the air every day, you're going to lose your hair. And I lost my eyelashes and I lost my eyebrows and I lost my just so many things, but gained so much from that experience. So it was hard. You know, I broke down several times, of course. And then I just picked myself up and I said, you know, what options do you have? You better get with it. So, I wrote a book, about my journey, and the work begins now. I had four rewrites, and there is such a thing as chemo brain. I was writing through the process, and I remember doing my first rewrite thinking, what are you writing about? And so I had to rewrite that. But now the work begins. I have a team, from a publishing company, and we're going to go through that. But, you know, I went through a lot of ups and downs, a lot of, you know, there were times when I'd see myself, and I didn't recognize myself. You look totally different, Paul. And, I'd get in front of a mirror and I would cry. And then I would see myself on the air, and I'd have nosebleeds in between stories. And, you know, I'd had to turn around, and, you know, Rick would take over. And it was just, it's hard. You know, it's not easy. I had terrible stomach problems because chemo affects the lining of your stomach, and along with all the hair that you lose. And it's just devastating. I remember going on a trip and it was very humid and my eyelashes fell off. And, you know, that's embarrassing. That's embarrassing. Yeah. But you know, you get through it, and that's just on the outside. Can you imagine what's happening on the inside, you know, the chemo does to your body? But we're here and I'm here and super grateful for my community support.
That was a lot. You covered a lot of territory there. And I want to say that, you know, when you announced on television that you had breast cancer, what struck me over the next several months was how often you were at work. I mean, I would be amazed, like, Estella hasn't really taken any time off for this cancer. And I mean, that's a lot of strength. To be able to do that. And I don't know how you did it. Are there some methods, some some things that you did at home that, that gave you more strength that you could tell other people might work for them?
Not really. You know, I couldn't eat. I had chicken soup, and even water tastes bad when you're on chemo. But I just had to, you know, keep pushing. I just had to keep pushing myself and keep. I was an example to my kids. First of all, I wanted to prove to them that I was strong and could get through this. And then, you know, all the people who love me and my community and the strangers who were lifting me too. But no, not really. You know, I didn't exercise very much because I didn't want to go to the gym because I didn't want to get an infection. Because many times if you get an infection, that can kill you. And so I just lost a lot of weight and just keep pushing through. And I think the biggest thing was I had to show my kids that I was going to be okay, that I was okay.
Well,
so that's
I think
the only thing I have, you know, that you got to push.
For anyone who has children, that's no doubt the biggest motivator. In life. 575-646-2212, the telephone number. We're here with Estella Casas today, who's talking about her journey through breast cancer and her stand with Estella Cancer Fund, and Dr. Stephanie Namir, who is a plastic surgeon with Texas Tech Physicians of El Paso and their director of breast reconstruction. And I would imagine, Dr. Namir, that you, the patients that you see are kind of, they've come through this war that they have fought with cancer, and there must be a lot of both, you know, the physical unloading and the emotional as well as they enter this phase of their journey with cancer.
Absolutely. I think one of the really rewarding parts of my job is that I'm able to be with patients kind of through that journey and work with my colleagues in breast surgery and medical oncology, the radiologists and radiotherapists, and kind of we have a very multidisciplinary team, occupational therapists, and together being able to get these patients from what we know is one of the worst days of their life, the day that they get a cancer diagnosis, and really being able to see them all the way through to the other side. And I'm very fortunate to be able to be a part of that and to be able to, I think, make a positive impact. You know, cancer takes something away from you, and I know I can never entirely give it back, but I do my best.
Yeah, absolutely. And gosh, it's already 1:51. Estella, one of the other things that you touched on a moment ago was writing a book. What is your book title?
Well, I don't have a title yet. So I just turned in, there's 43 chapters. And I have contributions from a lot of people from my team. I call it Team Estella, and I just wanted them to write about how my cancer changed them. And so it's 43 chapters plus Team Estella, and you know my daughter writes, and my sons write about you know what they went through and what they learned and how they came on the other side, and so it talks about. My fear fiestas, you know, when I cried, you know, when I broke down and cried, it talks about chemo brain and sometimes that you have like strange, you know, thoughts and just how my community, my family and my friends and strangers, the love of all those people helped get me through this, you know, terrible, terrible time in my life.
Well, you'll have to stay in touch. And
yes.
Chemo brain may be a working title. I don't know. But Dr. Namir, can you give us kind of a scientific perspective of what that means?
What, chemo brain?
Yes.
Probably not. Not anything super scientific. But I will say it's definitely a real thing. Chemotherapy impacts your entire body, as Estella has said. The great thing about chemo is that it kills cancer. The bad thing about chemo is that it affects a lot of other cells that are rapidly growing cells in your body. And it just takes a lot out of you. And I think that it's important for patients to give themselves a break, you know, during that process. I think the closest thing that many women will know who've not gone through chemotherapy would be pregnancy brain, where we know that
yes.
The brain actually shrinks during pregnancy because so much of your energy and nutrients and everything is going to the baby. And in this case, would you say, Estella, as someone who's been both pregnant and been on
yes.
chemotherapy?
Yes, yes, I do believe, I agree with you. It's, I think it's called the brain barrier. So basically chemo goes in through your whole body, and you're in a fog. I remember that I had to be very well aware of my teleprompter because I couldn't find words sometimes, and I couldn't express myself. And there really is such a thing as chemo brain, and sometimes I can use that as an excuse when I can't find words 4 years later.
You can. I give you permission to use it.
It's quite a process.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the point about giving yourself a break, people may not be able to see everything that's going on with you, right? If you cut off your arm, people would look at you and say, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. you're clearly mm-hmm. recovering from something terrible. But when you're on chemotherapy, a lot of times, it's not super visible to other people, but you have to remember your body is fighting. And so that takes a lot of energy. Give yourself a little bit of a break to get through that.
Estella, I think you have to find some grace. You know, I think many times we are very hard on ourselves. I think, you know what? Sometimes I think that now, 4 years into my battle, because, every day is a blessing and an opportunity to make a difference. And I'm never going to be out of the woods, ever. I know that after the five-year mark is when they say that you're in remission, but it can come back any day and comes back with a vengeance. And so I think now I'm able to let go and find grace. But it's been a journey. Yeah.
That was my next question, is that since you have hit that mark and now how safe do you feel going forward?
Never. Never. I'm still about 18 months to hit that mark, to reach that, to clear that hurdle. But just like it developed in 8 months, it can come back. It's not a, I sometimes say it's not a matter of if it comes back, it's a matter of when. And I just hope I'll have the same grit and courage to face it.
Dr. Niemer, what do you recommend for women who, I have a distant cousin who I'm not blood related to, but she's only 30 years yeah. old and is fighting, I believe they said stage 3 or stage 4 breast cancer. And so yeah. young. So, we know that young women probably aren't going to go out and get mammograms, but what young women can do is their self examination. And so why don't you describe what that needs to be like for us?
Absolutely. So you make an excellent point. We do know that there are certainly age is a risk factor for breast cancer. So we know that as you get older, your risk of developing breast cancer goes up. You're just kind of accumulating mutations most likely through your life. But there are some women who are diagnosed very early with breast cancer. And as you mentioned with your cousin, because we're not screening those patients, it may be that it's not until they're kind of in a later stage that those are caught. I recommend that all women about once a month examine your own breasts, and you can decide to do that at a certain point in your menstrual cycle so that it reminds you, or you can find other triggers, maybe the first day of the month or when your rent is due or those types of things. But your best bet, we often ask patients to examine themselves in the shower. The water can help your hands slide over your breast, and you really want to make sure that you're feeling the entirety of the breast and you're feeling for anything that changes. So some women may have fibrocystic breasts and have some kind of existing lumps in your breast, but certainly if you notice, wow, that's new, that's bigger, that's different, then those are the times that you want to see somebody and just check it out. And, most of the time it's going to be nothing, but it's much, much better to check on things and have them be nothing than to not check something out and risk it being more advanced when something's caught.
And I think it's very important to be aware of your body, but also to be aware of the people around you and your surroundings. Like I tell you, I believe in all those women and men and strangers who are angels to me, who alerted me to things. So be more aware of those around you too.
Estella, tell us how to learn more about the Stand With Estella Foundation and what kind of help it can offer people in the community.
So I don't have a website yet because this is brand new. The Stand with Estela Casas Cancer Foundation is brand new. My daughter is handling that. But the Stand with Estela fund through the El Paso Community Foundation, you can go there and donate. And I do not decide who gets what amount. I'm working with UMC, the Estela Casas Infusion Center for Hope and Healing. I'm working with the Rio Grande Cancer Foundation, and I'm also working with the Cancer and Chronic Disease Consortium. And they are the ones who vet the women who need help. And so these mammograms, they went through, I think we already gave out the 200 through Desert Imaging. I hope to have another campaign next year so more women can get their cancer screenings, because during COVID, a lot of people put off their cancer screenings, including men. And so I will continue to raise awareness and talk about breasts and maybe address some other issues for men's health as well. So it depends. I want to continue working with Albertsons. Albertsons has been such a great supporter of the fund. And so we'll see. We're working on a little holiday giveaway. We also have Bags of Hope, and you can see that through my Facebook page. And we're trying to raise some money for by raffling these beautiful purses. The money raised will go to scholarships for high school seniors who have either themselves gone through a breast cancer, a cancer journey, or somebody in their family. So, you know, we're trying to reach all segments of the population and all kinds of demographics to make a difference.
Estela, thank you so much for being so open and sharing your story. I know it helps so many people, and it's really, really great to see you again.
Great seeing you too, and thank you for the opportunity. It's something that we have to talk about, and thank you for allowing me to share my story. And we'll talk later when I have my book out.
Looking forward to it. And Dr. Stephanie Niemer of Texas Tech, thank you so much for spending this hour with us and for the really wonderful work that you do. Glad to have you.
Well, thank you so much for having me and giving me an opportunity to let people know that breast reconstruction may be an option for them. So thank you.
Absolutely. On the way next, it's Intermezzo by Request. Leora Zeitlin coming up after the news.